हरि ओ
between the Vastutraya, then this five topics of the Upanishads and the Dasa Mool, right? So that we see the connection that is there. So then he's established that, so in these five of the, so Vastutraya, first is Sambandha, then Abhideya, Prayojana. Then with the main topics of the Upanishads, it takes Sambandha and expands that into three. So you have Chit-Achit-Ishwara, you have the Supreme Lord, you have the Jiva, you have the material energy. Right? And then what's their relationship? So then now in the Dasamul, then those three, they themselves have been expanded. Right? The last four and five, the process of obtaining the Supreme and one's position, having obtained that, that still remains as one in all three of them. Does that make sense? Because even in Vastutraya, that can be divided into two, you know, as we've been discussing, we're dealing with Shankarshan and Pajumna, like that. So, yeah. So all of these things, when you're dealing with this body of knowledge, the main aspect then is Sambandhagyan. Right? Who everybody is, what is their relationship. Because if that's clear, only will Abhideya and Prayojana be able to be affected properly. So the Upanishads, the Vedanta, they are trying to establish the proper understanding. Then from there, it can move forward. Right? Then the Abhideya Shastras will take and expand Abhideya. Right? Prayojana Shastras will expand that. Does that make sense? But for most of all the study, when we say the philosophy, then basically what is expanded is the Sambandha. It means the others are also part of the philosophy. But generally, we would categorize it like that. Okay. So now in the Dasamula, we're taking the first one, the nature of Ishwara. Okay, so we're establishing the Vedas, because the Vedas is non-different from Krishna, it's established by Krishna. Then we have the Vedas, then everything's based on that. So Krishna is the absolute truth, he is omnipotent, and he is the fountainhead of all relationships and love. Okay? So that establishes his position. Means of all truths, he's the supreme. He has entered into everything. At the same time as he's the fountainhead of all relationships and love. So that means all the positions that are there, he is the source of the relationship with it. But even in the material platform, what one's looking for in relationship, he's still the source of that. So everything is there. Then so that takes care of the first of the five topics of the Upanishads, right? So then that's dealt with in by four of the Dasamula. Regarding the second topic, the nature of the Jiva, the question is whether it is different from Brahman or identical in all aspects with him. Dasamula Tattva answers as follows. 5. The living entities are Krishna's separated parts and parcels. 6. The living entity, due to his constitutional situation as marginal energy, may come under the sway of a material energy. And 7. Again, due to his marginal nature, the living entity in the liberated condition is free of the influence of material nature. Right? So that establishes the nature of the jiva. Right? So this is what will be the Upanishadic understanding. So then, the chit here, then it is, how do you say it? Marginal. It is a part and parcel of the Lord. So it establishes there where they come from. Right? They're a Brahman, so it's eternal, but it's separated eternal. So it's not the same as the Lord. Right? So the impersonal can't come up. Then they can fall under the influence of the material energy. So it's not that their being under is illusion. Right? It's due to illusion they're under. Right? Otherwise the jiva is not by that. The same way as by their same marginal nature, they can be freed from being involved with material nature. Right? Because some will say they are material energy, or you can't purify yourself, you're eternally damned. All these nice things come up from the idea that the soul actually can't become this. So what you're saying is that he's eternally damned, then you're actually saying that he is, how do you say? He is non-different from the material energy. So it's actually Buddhism, right? So in the modern religions where they profess eternal damnation, that's actually voidism. Right? Does that make sense? And that God, you know, can't be part of all this, he's aloof, then that means, you know, to avoid pantheism, you know, or, you know, God is everything, then they deify the Lord, and then he can't actually, his potencies can't be part of it. So therefore, then the material energy is separate from him. That's impersonal. Technically, even atheism. So, without understanding these things, much of what is professed as religion is actually impersonalism, atheism, and voidism. That's why these things are important, so one can tell the difference. Then the third point. Concerning the third point, the material energy, the key issue is whether it is created by Brahman and is real or illusory. The Dasamuttattva stated, 8. The living entity and everything in this material cosmos is simultaneously one and different from the Supreme Lord. So it's one and different, means it's coming from the Lord, but it's different from the Lord, right? His separated energy. So that is style, because otherwise impersonalism will say it doesn't exist. It's just a figment of your imagination. And the voidists also say they don't even bother with the figment. They just say it doesn't exist. So all you have to do is understand that, and then everything disappears. So both of them are looking at it that it's not real. It's not actually here. So this is illusory. So the Dasamuttattva establishes. The fourth question is, what is the means of attaining Brahman? Sadhana. The answer is follows. 9. Pure devotional service is the living entity's occupation and means. Right? So by devotional service, that's the occupation of the living entity. By that, whatever he needs will be gained. So that is his process. So there isn't another process. If devotees have an idea there's something else other than this, that's illusion. There isn't something else. Devotional service is everything that works. If one only sees that he's chanting his japa, that's devotional service, and nothing else really in connection with Krishna, that's illusion, that's maya. Because Krishna's created everything, he's in every atom, between every atom. All his potencies are what's making everything work, so therefore, to not see Krishna in everything, then that means there's some illusion going on. Make sense? But he's simultaneously one and different. So he is non-different from it, at the same time he is different from it, right? That's his unique, what you could say, facility or something as God. He can simultaneously be one with everything and be different. We can't do that, right? Material energy can't do that. So only he can do that. So that's how you know who's God, right? Because he can do that. And then regarding, yes.
Arjuna, one can see Krishna in only in a particular aspect of devotional service. Is that based on illusion?
Is someone able to only see Krishna in a particular aspect based on illusion? No, it's based on ignorance. Because otherwise then you'd have to then establish that the devotional service is then based on if there's illusion or not illusion, then it exists, right? So then that brings it also into the voidous state. Because only because devotional service can only exist if you're not in illusion. But devotional service can exist along with illusion, because devotional service is eternal. The temporary element is the illusion. You know what I'm saying? So even material things that the devotee needs is gained through devotional service.
If one has like more inclination towards a particular aspect of devotional service, like chanting.
No, he has an inclination, that's fine. That's just particular taste. You know, it's just like you have so much prasad, someone likes this more, someone likes that more. That, you know, that's taste. What we're saying, what's the illusion, is that if they think only the chanting can be connected to Krishna, because it's his name, that's illusion. You know what I'm saying? Because they say, you know, that all these other things and all that, that's maya. But at the same time, they're very happy to be involved in it. You know what I'm saying? So Vaishnavas don't look at it that way. Right? Only the Buddhists, it's all maya, so if you separate it, it doesn't exist anymore. Because their point is the mind and the material and the sense objects, you know, the field of activities, they're combined together. You separate it, there is no existence. What we're saying is they're separate things, and in illusion you combine them. So if you uncombine them, then the two still remain. Right? The two still function. But now they function based on knowledge, not illusion. The impersonalists say that they're combined, but that's an illusion that they're there, because they don't exist. There's only Brahman. So the soul thinking that they are part of this and all that and actually having all these tastes, that's illusory. So if, when you separate them, all they'll be left is the soul. All will be left is Brahman. Material energy will just evaporate. But at least the soul is left. But the Buddhist is that when you separate it, nothing will exist. So that's interesting. You can take nothing and combine it, because nothing has no, you know, inside, outside of that. But you can distinguish and make the nothing into two parts. Then combining those two parts, and then you get something. Right? You have zero, but then you divide the zero into two, and you get two zeros, and you put the two zeros together, and then you get, you know, all kinds of things. Right? Isn't that how it works? Okay. You can ask, that's a little boy, I'm sure, that they. So all these things, they're very foolish. These philosophies. So Dasamula is trying to establish it, the Upanishads are trying to establish it properly. Okay. So then the fifth point, then how Dasamula then answers it. Regarding the fifth point, the nature of the supreme goal, the major issue is whether the jiva is merged in Brahman, the opinion of the personalist, or retains it individually in the state of liberation, as told by Vaishnavas. According to Dasamula Tattva, 10. Pure love of Krishna is the living entity's ultimate goal. Right? So love means there has to be more than one. So then, as we learned from the evening lectures, Dasamula Tattva describes nine principles, pramayas, which are based on the authority of the Vedas, pramana. The thematic study shows that the mantras from Sri Upanishad are the same pramana mentioned in the beginning of Dasamula Tattva, Amnaya Prahatattvam. Thus, Sri Upanishad, who is renowned as the Acharya amongst the Shrutis, is the Lord's own answer to the five questions of the Vedantic discourse and the authority behind the tenets of Gaudiya Siddhanta. Our guide through these matters will be Sri Tattva Sutra, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's framework for studying the Vedanta philosophy. Sri Tattva Sutra contains five chapters. The first chapter describes the Supreme Lord, Ishvara. The second chapter explains the nature of the living entities, Chit. The third chapter describes the material energy, Achit. These three chapters outline Sambandha. The fourth chapter explains Abhideya, how the living entity should manipulate the material nature in order to obtain the supreme goal, sadhana. The fifth chapter describes Prayojana, the nature of that supreme goal, sadhya. After each chapter, there's a summary of the sutras. Whenever appropriate, the sutras and the purports of Sri Tattva Sutra are connected to the mantras and purports of Sri Upanishad. In other words, so now we've shown how the Vastutraya, the five topics of the Upanishads, and the Dasamul are all saying the same thing, right? So Dasamul is the full explanation, like that. So that then corroborates with everything else. Does that make sense? Are we clear on this? That it's not, this is not something artificial, this is natural. It's just the way it's explained. So now in the Tattva Sutra, the Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is taking the Upanishadic approach to our philosophy, to the Dasamul. And then explaining it or expanding it according to that. So there's five chapters according to the five topics. And in each topic that I remember, there are 10 sutras. So in that way, in 50 sutras, then he gives, you know, the essence of the Upanishadic verses, the Upanishadic point. So then that, wherever it's appropriate, then the various verses or purports of the Upanishad will be brought to show what is happening there. Or if there is... So then, he doesn't have it as a separate entity here. So we can try... Okay, so this first now in Sambandha. The first is Sambandha will be the first three chapters, right? Ishopanishad then covers these aspects in the invocation, mantras 4 and 5, 8 and 14. So, just on dealing with this, then Tattva Prakaranam is the absolute truth. Just I want to show the overall section. Okay. So, first sutra, the Supreme is one, he has no rival. Right? Two, because he is limitless, he has all powers, even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of material nature. Three, no one should be surprised that the Supreme possesses mutually contradictory natures. Four, he is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He cannot be known by ordinary knowledge, for he is known only by devotional service. Five, he is the eternal Supreme Truth, beginningless and endless. He exists beyond the limits of space and time. Sutra 6. Although he is transcendental, the playful Lord creates the material universes, filled with conscious beings and inert matter. Sutra 7. If someone claims the Lord is different from his potency, then I reply, no, it is not so, for they are non-different. Right? So we see the first two points means establish those ones from the Dasamul. Right? He is limitless, he has all powers. You know, Sarva Shaktir, even though he remains beyond the touch of the modes of nature. And the Supreme One, he has no rival. Eka Paro Nanyaha. So that establishes those two. Then going on that, then he'll have all these varieties of qualities, everything is coming from him and all. Then it comes to Sutra 7, then we're dealing with that third point. If someone claims the Lord is different from his potencies, then I reply, no, it is not so, for they are non-different. 8. Because he is supremely independent, he does not become changed, even though he is the creator. Right? We create something, deal with something, we become involved. It actually enters. See, the difference is it doesn't enter Krishna. Krishna enters it, but it doesn't enter him. That's why he is independent. But when we enter, it enters us. So that's how then we stop being kshetra-gya and start being kshetra. Right? So that's how Krishna can deal with anything, and he is supremely independent. So it can't control him. Does that make sense? So this is the difference. That's why Krishna can work with anything and not be attached to it. Anything we work with, we get attached to. That's the difference. 9. Because he is perfect and complete, his nature is always unchanged. Right. Because one has to also have this faith and all that he remains unchanged, so you can have faith he's always going to be there. Right? Otherwise, if he changes like us, then there's going to be a problem. Sutra 10. That's why you see it's also just a feminine, one of the feminine activities. Is that they always, no matter what a variety of situation, they have to test the masculine reaction. Right? With the idea is they'll get a consistent result. Okay? Right? Does that make sense? So all these different things, they want to see that there's consistency. But at the same time, is one is able to deal with the variety that's there in the nature of the feminine. So Krishna will interact with everything, but at the same time, he is consistent. So that makes him dependable. Right? If someone's not consistent, they're not dependable. That's why you have somebody, maybe they're fun to be around, they do all kinds of crazy things and this and that, and they're very entertaining, but you wouldn't want to get too close, you wouldn't want to, marry them, because they're not dependable, they're not consistent. So the person, and then the person who's consistent, they have a tendency to be very boring, you know? So, okay, you marry the consistent guy, but then you're always out trying to do other things to try to find some interest. You know, go here, go there, do this, do that, like that. So the thing is Krishna is the combination. He's consistent at the same time he can deal with the moment. So therefore, you can deal with the moment means you can deal with the unlimited variety. So therefore, the variety can manifest and function. That makes sense? So that way, then, we're interested to deal with Krishna. He's consistent, he doesn't change. At the same time, he's interested in us, and he'll deal with us according to our individuality. Right? So you can't get better than that. And 10, compassion is the motive of his actions. He has no other motive. For his every desire is at once fulfilled without any effort on his part. Whatever he wants happens. So therefore, his only interaction with us is because of compassion. Right? That's the basis. So this idea, you know, he's angry and nasty to do something wrong, and then the lightning bolt comes out of the sky and he turns a little pile of ash and this and that. That's not exactly his motive. That's how we think God should be. So therefore, you know, he'll respond to that. He doesn't have here an ego that he has to deal with. He is God no matter what. Right? Make sense? So, you know, you think he's like this, he'll act like that. To you. Just like, you know, Krishna said, atheists think Krishna comes as death personified, right? Because they reject all other forms of God, but death they have to surrender to. That makes some sense there. You can contemplate this. Okay? So this is all about Krishna. Does that make some sense? Yeah.
Can I ask a question about the point of what you mentioned before? You said that Krishna can also be non-different from his energy.
He can be, he is.
Yes, he is.
But at the same time, he is separate as a person.
But we are not. That my question is that we are either absorbed in the spiritual or material.
Yes, that's the point.
So we are always...
We're always dependent. We're never independent. But the point is it's illusion, because in the material energy, you contemplate the sense objects and basically you become the sense objects. But that's separate from Krishna. You know what I'm saying? But in the spiritual world, they may be contemplating the aspects of the spiritual world, but it's all about Krishna. It's all connected to Krishna. So therefore, their absorption in it then is all in connection with Krishna. So there's no illusion. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, in the spiritual platform, the mind and the spiritual realm being combined is not a problem. In the material world, where the mind and the material energy is combined, that's a problem. Because material energy is just Krishna's inferior energy, so it's still Krishna. But we don't see Krishna in it. That's the problem. Well, in the spiritual world, everything's conscious, so everything's connected to Krishna, so you don't have that problem. But we have to go through the mechanics of taking the mind, removing it from what it's attached to, so we can get to the spiritual platform and reattach it to the spiritual. But the idea of just you remove it from the material energy, and then that's the goal, that's the end. Only the impersonalists and Buddhists say that. We use the process to separate so that we can establish. So for us, when you separate them, then like the Buddhists say, you know, existence is extinguished. We say not only material existence, the illusion is extinguished. You still remain, material energy remains. You know what I'm saying? And then the impersonalists, they say when you separate it, then you merge in Brahman, you're on the Brahman platform. We say the same thing. But, you know, you have no regard for the material energy. But the point is we see that Brahman as Krishna. So therefore, then it has that personal aspect. So both of them understand a particular portion of it. That's why it has some element of truth. That's how people can commit themselves to it. Because there's some element of truth there. So Krishna is the supreme truth. So all truths are coming from him. But if your truth does not connect back to Krishna, it is illusion. So if you're saying that, you know, the modern, we have to consider it, it's fact and all this and that, and it's a reality, that's fine, it's a truth. But that whatever is truthful about it has come from Krishna. But if you don't see that truth in connection to Krishna, you are in Maya. You are professing Maya. And you don't even have to have any letters after your name to do it to be a professor.
Okay. That separation takes place when we see everything as Brahman.
When you shape, yeah. Basically there, yes, when the Brahman is understood, it does that. That would be the mechanics. But the point is that that's the field of activity. So it's Krishna's field. So in other words, you have chit, achit, ishwara. So when you don't make a distinction between chit and achit, then you're an illusion. So you have to be able to see, I am the spirit soul, and the material energy is separate. Right? So now, in that, having done that much, that brings you to the liberated stage. But liberation for us is not really anything very interesting. Right? So therefore, you have to still see Ishwara. Because in these others, they may see like that, but once in their process of separating, then at their goal, there is no chit or ishwara. Or there's only chit, or only ishwara. But whatever it is chit and ishwara become merged. Right? And achit disappears, because it wasn't there in the first place. Right? And the Buddhist, then everything disappears. But for us, it's when it's separated, that's when you can really clearly see three. I'm chit, then there's the achit that I was identifying with, working with, have all my desires, but it's not there. But I see that in relationship to Ishwara. So that's why these three are brought out. Because everyone will start there. The difference is when they apply their process, most everybody else doesn't remain there. But for us, because as we said, Krishna is always there, he always exists, he's consistent, he never changes. That means how he has himself and his expansions being non-different, that means everything in the whole cosmic creation functions on the same principles. That makes sense? It'll always function on the same principle. It won't function on a different principle. So that's why you can't really say that these are real religions or real philosophies, because they start off with the same kind of concepts that we'll have. But once they apply their philosophy, then it changes. Like when they get to the fifth stage, when they get to Prayojana, there is no chit achit and ishwara. But with us it still remains. But that achit is actually, you know, the spiritual energy. But she takes the form of the material energy for us. Okay?
No, when you were explaining this, Maya came to me that actually as the jiva is a force and parcel of life, there is also some similarities in the sense that different. That's the case of the body. Let's say the Buddhist is so identified so much with the body, and then the body dies, it's not body, but it becomes a person, because he understands a little bit different from his body and all this. And the body, in that sense, is also similar to the Lord, because he's identified with the body, and at the same time, not identified in the sense that he knows what is important, experience of the degree of devotion and realization. He can see that actually in the full communion with what Krishna. Of course, we are minute Krishna, sometimes you say that I'm not different from the body, at the same time I am different angle, but the different realization take place.
Mm-hmm.
The same situation for the same jiva, that one is an ignorance.
Yes. It means one identifies as servant of Krishna, one uses the conditional identity for his interactions in the world in connection with his duties, but not that he actually identifies with it. You know, it means, in other words, this is the conditioned nature, so that's therefore how you interact with the world. That's why it's said that better to do your own duty than someone else's, because if you do someone else's duty, then technically you're not using your own identity. So that's just a in the same vein as I'm Krishna's servant, but I think I'm the Lord. I'm doing someone else's duty. So the duty I'm trying to do is God's instead of mine. So in the same way as we're here and whatever our duty is, then we're trying to do someone else's duty because we think we're going to get more benefit out of it. So I think I'm going to get more enjoyment by being God rather than a servant. So I take this up. So the same way I may think that I'm going to get more benefit from doing something else. You know, I'm a Vaishya, but if I become a Kshatriya or a Brahmin, I'll get more out of it.
For somebody that doesn't really, not only act intellectually, but practice, still is carrying some impersonal consideration.
The impersonal consideration may be there, but it's not that it's doesn't have elements that aren't favorable. As a conclusion, it's unfavorable. But basically, as a process, it's not, because it's naishkarmya. So it actually is based on a devotional thing. It means that, I think we're just reading one other point, is that there is actually technically nothing separate from devotional service. Everything's based on devotional service. Just people don't know it's devotional service, therefore it's an illusion. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if they themselves are interacting with the material energy, then it's still based on Krishna's compassion and all the relationships and all the different moods, and still Krishna's the ultimate goal. But they don't see any of that, so it's illusion. If the devotees are dealing with the material energy, you know, in connection with Krishna, and making arrangements for that, that the materialist can see it, then he's still in the same illusion, but because of the devotees, now it becomes a jnata sukriti. He still doesn't know what's going on. He still sees it, you know, whatever. But it's a jnata sukriti. The devotees, it's devotional service. The non-devotees, it's a jnata sukriti. So that's why it's also, you know, important to understand the example of the illusory energy, is that it's the same person. A Mahamaya and Yogamaya are the same person. It's just two different offices. You know, it's like, you know, how you say, you know, the mom at home or the mom at work, the same person, but the duties are different. Your point's good, but your example is not, because Pancharatra is ekayana, which means only those rules and rituals that are connected to the Supreme Lord. That's what makes Pancharatra. Because Pancharatra is everything about it is all Vedic. All the things are described somewhere in the Vedas. So the sages from studying the Vedas and practicing it in their life in connection to Vishnu, right? That's Pancharatra. If it's being followed beyond that, that will then be what, that's what the Vedas are for. But it gives rise to people following the Vedas and not connecting it to Krishna. So technically the Daiva Varnashram technically is Pancharatra, because everything about it is meant there. But a lot of what you're dealing with in Daiva Varnashram isn't basically directly supportive of worship of the deity. Right? So therefore those kind of things, that's the Vedic side, but its effect is the same as Pancharatra. Like, so some people follow the Vedic, and if they don't connect it to the Lord, they only get the piety of following the Vedic culture. But in Daiva Varnashram, then those things that are directly devotional service, you get the devotional benefit of that. Of those that aren't directly, you still get the Pancharatra benefit, because it's been connected to the Lord. That makes sense? Yeah, they only accept half the process. You know, it would be like saying you accept all the different, you know, you take your bath, you do all your different things, you go to the temple, you ring the bell, you do all the, but you don't accept the deity. That would probably be a better thing. You know, you don't worship the deity. You just do everything there. You cook, you do all the different things, you know, but you don't actually, there's no deity.
And with your Brahman initiation.
But that's the Veda.
Yeah. Think
about yeah, no, that's all they do. They only accept how to get free from material. That's where they stop. So that's why we're saying is that we have Chitta-Chit Ishwara who we start. Then after applying the process, then we still have Chitta-Chit Ishwara. But the Achit is actually the spiritual nature. So you still have all three. But the process is you're separating them. But when we even separate, we still keep all three in place. It's just a matter of they've been combined in an unhealthy way. Right? It means the Lord is there, it's His energy, it's just making everything work, but we're not recognizing Him. And we think we are the material energy. So the whole understanding relationship, you know, is faulty. So we're separating Him into the three so that you can properly work. You can engage the material energy in Krishna's service. Make sense? So all three are there. So at the end it'll be you're engaging the spiritual nature in Krishna. Right? But the whole point is we're always a servant. It's not that I'm engaging, I'm assisting my seniors in engaging. But even those who are successful materially is because they understand the all these things in connection with that they've gained this knowledge or these abilities from authority. Right? And then they're good at it. Absolutely. Probably 100, you could say 108%. Pancharatra is formalized Bhagavad. Pancharatra Bhagavad means you're always absorbed in the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna. The Pancharatra is formalizing that or ritualizing that so you actually do it, since you'd rather be doing something else. No, that's the Veda. Pancharatra doesn't have anything to do with that. Anything more than the Bhagavad does. See, you're saying the Gayatri is going through, you're using example, that's the Brahma Gayatri. The Brahma Gayatri is Veda, not Pancharatra. So that, getting to that platform of Brahman, that's there. But the Pancharatra Gayatris, they take you into specific worship of the Lord. Because you're worshiping Krishna, you're chanting the holy name, that's Krishna. Everything about Krishna is there. So then the Gayatris are specific than which aspect you're worshiping. Yes, because as I said, we're following the Vedic from the same position as the Pancharatra. So you have the Vedic literatures. Then you take out of those all rituals and anything that had to do with Vishnu. I put that all together in one place, that's called Pancharatra. So it's the essence of the Veda. The Veda is meant only to worship the Supreme Lord, but a lot of people make the mistakes that it's not. They get distracted. Because the language used, the nature of the rituals and all that, one can easily get distracted. So the Pancharatra then goes through all that and takes out the essential points so that it is clear and one won't get distracted. One knows it's all about the deity. Right? Does that make sense? That makes Pancharatra. When Brahma lost the Vedas, when they were stolen, then he asked Krishna to re-speak the Vedas, but before he speaks the whole Vedas, since that'll take some time, just give him the essence first. Right? So Krishna did. In five nights he spoke the essence of the Veda, and that's called Pancharatra. So that's the whole point of it. Its whole point is that it's already the essence of the Veda. So Daiva Varnashram means you're following Varnashram or the Vedic just to please Krishna. So there's no difference between Daiva Varnashram and Pancharatra. Just that we look at the form of it, then one is dealing what is directly in connection with the deity, and the other one is dealing with those things outside the connection of the deity, all the different samskaras and you know, the rites of passage that are there in your life, going from one ashram to the next, your occupation, you're making your money, things. Because Pancharatra doesn't deal with how you make your money, because you just worship the deity. You know, so therefore, you just worship the deity and you offer, make offerings to the Lord, you eat that, you know. Hari Bol. People come, they give things to the deity, they give things to the Brahmins. So there is absolutely zero separate concept or idea of maintenance. So Pancharatra is just dealing with ashram. That's all. And it doesn't deal with Forvarn, it just deals with devotee who's pujari, that's all. It just deals with Brahman, that's all. So if you want to expand that out of need, then you want need to get married, you need to do that, that's then Vedic. But if that's done in support of the worship of the deity and chanting the holy name, it's non-different. Right? It's different, but it's non-different. We always have to remember is, you know, somewhere down under here, there's the mlechas and yavanas. And then, you know, somewhere up here, then we're dealing with human society, the Vedic culture. Above that is Pancharatra, above that is Bhagavata. We should never think of Pancharatra, oh, well, that's because it's not, you know, that's ritual, the Vedic ritual. That it somehow or other goes lower than underneath the rock where the Vedic mulechas and yamas. It's human life, and it's perfect human life. So it's not even a comparison. You know, it'd be like, you know, how you say it? It'd be like the sun and, you know, taking two rocks and hitting them together and getting a spark. You know, it's just there's not a compare. You can say yes, okay, they're both fire. Well, not really, you could say. You know, so therefore, you know, there's a lifestyle, there's a value system, there's interaction. People, you know, eat food, and you know, if you're not from the Brazilian jungle, you wear clothes. You know, it's stuff like that. So these things, then there's some comparison. But it doesn't mean that they therefore become equal. But that's the misnomer of the modern Indologists. Because they think it's just another culture. There's the Indian, there's the culture of the Indus Valley, and then there's America. And so they're both countries, and they're both cultures, so therefore they're equal. So that's the problem. And there, what gets you to the Brahman platform is the Brahma Gayatri. Other ones then take you into the specific worship that is being offered by the holy name. You know what I'm saying? Everybody chants the holy name. Nityananda and his associates are chanting the holy name. They go 72 hours without stopping. But they're all cowherd boys. Right? So their Bhagavat mantra is the same, but their Pancharatric mantras will be different. They won't use the necessarily the mantras we would use in their as Gayatri. But the Brahma Gayatri, to get yourself out of the material world, that's the same. And being in the spiritual world, that's the same. But the guide and see that you get to the specific place in the spiritual world, that's the Pancharatra. Okay.
Yes?
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you.